Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Monday, January 11th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
We'll be talking about this, but we had another brutal sell-off in oil today. At one point, you had prices plunging more than 6% to a new 12-year low. And then, of course, that followed the Chinese stock market. They fell by another 5%, and overnight interest rates for their currency outside of China soared to nearly 40%, their highest since the launch of the offshore market. And so, again, lots of warnings on any type of further devaluation from the yuan, and saying that that could cause oil prices spiraling lower. So we'll just have to wait and see, but let's first get to, before we have any discussions about that, let's go ahead and see what the gold prices are doing right now. In the New York spot price down $9, $9 at $1,076. Silver's down 0.06 at $13.97. Platinum was down big today, down 33, which makes sense with the with China. 849. Palladium also down big, down 15 at $481. You have stronger dollar. I mean, it all makes sense. 51. It's lies and it's not true. At least you can see it sort of works together in their little world of illusion, in their little illusionary world. The U.S. dollar is up 0.51 at 98.89. Crude oil, we're looking in the aftermarket on the New York down 1.98 at 31.18. Paper markets today, they were down most of the day, but about the last hour of trade, the Dow managed to get up at 52 points at 16,398. The NASDAQ was basically unchanged, down 5 points, 46.37. The S&P, that was up a little over a point at 19.23. The yield on the 10-year, 2.16% at 0.03. The euro, 109, that was down 0.64. And as I mentioned, the China's stock market was down another 5%. Hong Kong was down almost 3%. And pretty much Germany, the European markets were just down maybe a 0.25%. So no big changes in those markets yet. But it's interesting now with the big pressure that we've seen on the stock markets that they're really not getting any comeback. They're not getting any quick bigger upsides.
Well, the
in
fact
the numbers.
That it didn't go down today.
But usually when you have
a
weak
evidence that the when you have a protection team is exerting a little bit of energy and they're not dead yet, and they're able to keep it at least positive today.
But my point is, with the huge job market report on Friday, with the markets being down as large as they were last week on a whole, you'd think they'd be able to muster more than 52 points.
Well, I agree.
So, again, my point is there's still a lot of pressure that's coming from these markets, or we'd see much higher.
Well, maybe they read the report that the actual number of jobs created last in December. They reported what, 333,000? I don't remember.
It was 292.
292. All right. Mm-hmm. The actual number, according to David Stockman, was in the neighborhood of 11,000. All right. So they just overshot by a tad. The real number is 11,000. They report 300,000 or thereabouts. They're, 30 times. The number is 30 times higher.
Well, even if you don't think David Stockman's numbers are correct, 11,000, I mean, you still got a huge discrepancy there. We know they weren't 292, and we certainly know that a lot of those were all part-time. Even at 50%, I mean, it's a huge discrepancy. And a lot of those were all, even that 11,000, they were all part-timers.
Yeah, I understand. How many of those jobs were really productive and how many were step and fetch it, people's...
You want fries with that?
Yeah, you want fries with it. That'll be the thing we have to teach all the kids in grade school and high school, how to properly ask if you want to supersize that or not. That'll be important to holding your job in the future, children. And the Onion, the State of the Union speech is tomorrow night. And for those of you, he's going to deliver his seventh and final State of the Union address tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Obama will speak before a joint session of the U.S. Congress. And the Senate, of course, and touch on a variety of topics, including the economy, climate change, foreign policy, health care, social progress, according to the White House. The address will live stream online at the White House website and also the official White House YouTube website. So you want to watch on the Internet, you can. And my only observation is get ready to laugh. The State of the Union speech should be Obama's doing his best stand-up routines ever. Now, I'm reminded of Hank Williams. He used to sing that song on Monday Night Football, "Get ready for some football. Are you ready for some football?" I'm thinking Obama should be singing, "Are you ready for some bull stuff?" Because that's what we're probably going to get tomorrow. In any case, State of the Union. One thing he can say about the State of the Union is he's not going to be around here for the next one. All right. There's cause for optimism. All right. He should start out, "This is my last State of the Union." Yay! Yay! And the crowd goes wild. Biggest round of applause he'll probably get in his whole 8 years. So, anyway. What are they actually going to say for the State of the Union? Can they really say that's positive? It'll be interesting to see. But
what's always interesting is the little things. It usually goes over. 95% of the people's, it goes right over their heads. But just like I saw a Christmas video of him where he was talking, about. The birth Jesus and so forth. It's like he never mentioned Jesus's name. There's just so much that he admitted. It was just like he could barely choke out the story that, you know, but he wanted everyone to believe that he was this, you know,
that he's
this
not
person
a
of faith, that, you know, he was this person of faith.
Not
yeah.
Muslim faith.
And it was just like he could barely choke it out. And I mean, it was just so obvious. But most people wouldn't even think to do this. But yeah, he is going to, it's going to be on the White House YouTube and Snapchat, whatever that is. And he's going to sit down on Friday. Now, this is our so-called president. He's going to sit down on Friday with three YouTube celebrities for a live interview from the East Room. You have Ingrid Nilsson, a 26-year-old known as a YouTube as Miss Glamorazzi.
Oh, that sounds, that should be it. I can see we've got an intelligent political discussion coming now.
Another one is going to be, I'm not sure the person, Adande Thorne, a video game enthusiast known online as Swoozy, and Destin Sandland, who makes educational videos. And it's like, are you kidding me with all the problems that we have in the world? And, you know, we get Ms. Glamorazzi and
yeah.
Swoozy.
Yeah. I agree. I don't know what's wrong with this guy.
Sign of the times.
Does he have just a death wish or something like that? I mean, is he making, he's making, you know, some people that are conspiracy theorists think that something will happen and Obama will try to stay in office, you know, beyond into his third term. I don't buy that for a minute. I don't accept that. But
the world
way he's behaving, he doesn't behave like he thinks he's going to be sticking around for another term. That's for sure.
Now, you know, if I think if anyone had the, I could see him actually trying. But on the other hand, I think the condition of this country and the people, I think there would be an explosion of, it wouldn't happen. He wouldn't be allowed to stay in there.
No, he's not going to be allowed to stay.
No,
there's
so,
no way.
There's no way.
The only way he can remain president is if the country is destroyed and nobody else. And if it is, he won't have anybody to talk to anyway, assuming he survives. It can't be. He's not going to be there. If there's any semblance of federal government still being constitutional, they're going to have somebody new in the Oval Office January of next year. Right, we've got to be a year to go before Obama's bye-bye, and we're all going to, you know, it'll be one of these scenes. You remember that iconic photo of President Nixon getting up into the helicopter and waving goodbye. as he's leaving the White House and the presidency. We're going to get something like that for Obama before this is all over, and it'll be another yay. I don't know. I'll feel like a munchkin. The witch is dead.
I'm sure my words would be just, I'm almost willing to take Hillary over him. Just kidding, everyone.
You know, I'm not, you know, that's a fact. I hadn't thought about that, but if I had to choose between Hillary and Obama, I wonder. I mean, it's not clear who I would choose if the choice was there. But I'm not even convinced that Hillary will be around for the, you know, so much is coming up against her.
But you know what? It's kind of interesting, though, because you don't hear much about Bernie Sanders. And it's interesting to think, and most of us believe there's no way that Hillary would be elected due to her history, the baggage that she carries. But what an opportunity for when you get into these states and so forth for really people turning to Bernie Sanders. I mean, he could be the little guy from behind, or everybody thinks he's behind, but he's just very quiet. And anytime you have someone that's very quiet, like,
he's just napping. You get elderly, you're not quiet, you're just politicians are awfully quiet. What are you up to?
You just might be surprised that he might finish stronger than anybody's anticipating. And usually when no one pays attention and everybody's focused on Trump, that's how you can come up and take, you know, and take the win. So,
well, maybe because people don't pay enough attention to Bernie to have many negatives about him. Some people are for him and the rest of them don't. Who is he? You know, there isn't much negative necessarily about Bernie Sanders, negative opinion on him. There's some positive for some supporters, and who knows, maybe the man can be elected simply by not having many negative opinions. Certainly Hillary is awash in negative opinions, and Trump is going to inspire his fair share. It's not going to be anything like a majority, but like a fair share. Here's an article from the American Mirror, and the headline is Shock Poll. 20% of likely Democratic voters to cross over vote Trump. That's the headline. A shocking new survey released Friday by Mercury Analytics finds that nearly 20% of likely Democrat voters who were polled would cross over in the general election and vote for Republican frontrunner Donald Trump. I don't see, certainly in the case, they're going to vote for Trump. They're certainly not going to vote for Hillary. I doubt that they're going to vote for – I doubt that they'd change their mind if Bernie Sanders was the candidate. Can any Democrat win if 20% of the Democratic Party crosses over and votes Republican? Is it even possible? I mean, this is only one poll, and it's a year or 11 months away from the election. So actually, what, 10 months away from the election, I guess, 11. Any case – can any Democrat win if 20% of likely Democrat voters are going to cross over and vote Republican, at least vote for Trump? That's if Trump is the candidate. Now, if they just run one of the regular Republican candidates, they'll just stay where they are and vote Democratic. But as long as Trump is still in the race, they'll vote for Trump. Can the Democrats lose 20% of their voters and still expect to win?
And was this basically because of Hillary, or was this basically because of just the satisfaction?
I think it's basically because of Trump. Trump is saying what a lot of people want to hear. Even Democrats are sitting back and saying, this guy's all right. Now, I don't mean all of the Democrats, but some of them, even the ones who harm a vote Democrat, I don't care who runs on the Republican ticket. Well, yeah, some of them will never vote. They wouldn't vote for the Messiah if he was running as a Republican. I understand that. That's part of politics and the rest of that sort of thing. But 20% are saying, I'm going to cross over. That means there's 30%, 40% who are thinking about it, who may not even vote. They won't vote for the Republican, but they might not show up to vote for the Democrat. And the point is, you know, it's early. It's too early to say this poll is decisive, but it sure is indicative that the Democrats are in for trouble, trouble, trouble. And it's hard to find. Where do you find a bright light for the Democrat Party right now? It's really difficult. Trump has simply... he's captured the American electorate right now. And you see him in the news every day, what Trump said lately. What did he do with the Muslims? What did he do with the illegal aliens? What did he do? He is setting the agenda right now. Everybody else is reacting to Trump. Trump is leading, not just leading in the polls. He's leading in the terms of setting the agenda and what we're going to talk about today. Well, it depends on what did Trump have to say. If he can continue that, I mean, he's almost the de facto president right now. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, we're going to run the special. Again, my favorite AU $5 Liberty gold piece, along with 20 1-ounce silver eagles. Those are dated 2016s, and the cost for that package is $700. And if you'd like to spend $600, you can replace that AU $5 Liberty gold piece with a Swiss franc, a brilliant uncirculated Swiss franc. They just came in, beautiful coins for a foreign coin, very recognizable and acceptable. You could receive that along with 21-ounce silver eagles for $600. So two little packages, an American coin, the AU $5 Liberty and Silver Eagles for $700, and a AU Swiss franc or BU Swiss franc for $600. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And, of course, make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Got an article here from Kiplinger Magazine. And it's the headline is "How much tax you'll pay on your lottery winnings," and it's a reference to the Powerball payout, which is now expected. They're going to select some numbers again on Wednesday, and they're anticipating a $1.4 billion
that's unbelievable.
Jackpot. That's just astonishing. And I don't know, is that a tribute to how much money they're giving away, or is that a tribute to how little our money is worth?
How little our money is worth.
You know, we're constantly receiving information indicating that we are in some sort of a deflationary period right now. But $1.4 billion, I mean, this is like, are you sure we're talking about dollars? Or are you talking about pesos? All right? Maybe 1.4 billion pesos. By the time we get done with that, we'd, you know, maybe that's what it counts to. But it says the federal government wants to take a bite out of that big Powerball payout. Your state might, too. The $1.4 billion Powerball jackpot has generated a lot of speculation about the best ways to spend that much money. In reality, the winner will end up with far less than that. $1.4 billion is the value of annuity payments over 30 years. They're going to give you the $1.4 billion divided by 30 years, which translates into, I don't know, $300,000 or something like $400,000 a year. And by the time you get to the end of this, what are your numbers going to be worth, assuming you even last for 30 years? But $1.4 billion, but they say if you opt for an immediate lump sum cash payment, your payment will be a mere $806 million before taxes. It just cracks me up, a mere $806 million. I don't know if I could make it on just an $806 million melody. Even before tax, even when we take the taxes away, then I'd be in a lot of trouble. I don't know if I could survive. And make no mistake, your tax bill will be significant and unavoidable. Someone is here to help you. The top federal tax rate is 39.6% on 2016 income of more than $415,000 for individuals. That means you'll pay about $320 million in federal income taxes. Reduce, that's if you take a lump sum payment. You'll pay $320 million in federal income taxes, reducing your spendable winnings to about $486 million. All right, the IRS will automatically take 25% of your winnings, and you'll owe the rest next April at tax time. Your state might want a cut of the pie also. New York taxes residents will have to pay 8.8% of the jackpot. New York City will want another 3.9% of the jackpot, whittling the Big Apple's residents stake to 384. Get that? You win. Yay! I won $1.4 billion, and I got to keep $384 million. Government takes a billion out of 1.4, at least in New York. Residents of Alaska, Florida, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, where I am, Washington, and Wyoming are off the hook because those states have no income taxes. Still, it really, I mean, look, I would, if I won $384 million, all right, or $400 million, or $450, whatever it is down here in Texas, of course I'd be delighted. But still, it is interesting that out of the alleged $1.4 billion, if you take a lump sum payment, you get less than $400 million. That's government here to help you, here to help me, and here to spoil the fun. You know, this is the sort of thing where you, when you stop to think about it, how many people have won substantial prizes from the lottery? And by the time you get done with it, the implication is that the government may be taking half or more of those lotteries. Let's have a lottery, and you could win big, only the government's going to win even bigger. And they're going to win every time. You get a chance in a million, they get it. They're sure. We're going to get ours.
And then, Al, you go on drugs and alcohol, and you're broke in a matter of 5 years.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. You know, you would think that having all that money would be a great blessing. And I think if you're sensible, it is. It's hard to imagine how it could be a curse. But a lot of people who've won the lottery, it's just driven them into bankruptcies, ruined their lives. They get all that money and they don't know what to do with it. And they do stupid things with it. And they get to feeling guilty after they buy a new house, a car, a boat, an airplane, whatever. And they discover, you know, that life has not really changed. They've got all that new stuff. And here they are, the same people they were before. Plus, they don't have their jobs anymore. I don't know. In any case, if you win the $1.4 billion on Wednesday, Just get ready to pony up $1 billion to the government.
Well, you know what, Al? So many people, too, when they win that type of money, they don't share it. You know, they want to have it all, and they might give a little here and a little there. But I always said that if I won the lottery, I would share it. You know, I would give most of it away.
Right over, here's your $50. Here's another 50 for you.
But I would give most of it away. I mean, how much do you need in your lifetime?
Government wants. That's what the government thinks, too. You should give most of it
away.
But
I think that's why these people are so unhappy. I think that's why these people are so unhappy. And anyway, we got a caller. We got Joe from Arkansas.
All right, Joe. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you, Al and Melody?
Just fine.
Complain.
Yeah.
What you got for us?
Well, I wanted to comment on a trend that I see in the economy. You know, generally all the attention goes to what the big important people are doing. But, you know, I run a small business myself, and so I kind of pay attention to what the little people that don't really matter much are doing. And one interesting trend that I see is an increasing interest in fine quality handmade stuff. You know, like as the big corporations are moving more and more to getting people out of the production process altogether and going to robots, I've noticed that more and more people seem to be interested in buying well-made, handmade stuff. And it's like I live in a town of about 75,000 people, Fayetteville, Arkansas, and recently two stores that sell locally made, well-made, handcrafted stuff have opened up here, and they seem to be doing pretty well. And I'm a sign painter myself, and just the other day a young couple called me that they want me to paint a sign for them, and they are also going into the business of they're opening up a little shop to sell fine quality, locally made, handmade stuff. And so this seems to be a trend that I see more and more. And I still paint signs by hand. I learned back in the 70s. And when the computerized sign-making systems came in, I just didn't go to them. I said, well, I want to keep painting signs by hand, and I'll see if I still get any customers. And there seem to be quite a few people that like a well-done hand-painted sign, and that they call me specifically because I still do that. So I've kept real busy ever since. And so that's an interesting trend that I see in the economy. So if somebody's looking for something to do, if somebody is out of work and, you know, wants to go into some kind of business, you know, if there's something that you'd like to make and you're willing to work hard at it and do a really good job of making something, you know, fine handcrafted quality, there might really be a market for it out there.
Do you think the market is there because these items are made by hand or because the items are made locally? Because you're saying those are two sides of the same coin.
I think people like both.
Yeah, I understand. That's I think they are two sides of the same coin. But it's not just a question of made by hand. It's a question of being made locally. And it's an interesting sign in the sense that people are less interested in imports. We buy the stuff that they make in China. The prices are cheap. The prices are right. Hard to resist, but we don't really feel good about it. On the other hand, if we could buy something that was made by somebody who lived down the street or in our local economy, and that's what anything by hand pretty much means, you're selling into the local economy. You're not getting it on the internet. So what do you think that means? Do you think people are just fed up with the foreign imports or?
Actually, I understand there are some websites on the internet like Etsy, where people make handcrafted stuff and sell it on that website. And I think Amazon is also opening up a website where they sell handcrafted stuff. And quite a few people are doing pretty well on those, you know, selling handcrafted stuff all over the world on those websites. But I think basically people kind of instinctively feel that this trend of globalism and robot-made stuff is not a healthy trend. You know, it's not good for the future of humanity. And they're trying to get back to something saner, you know, they're trying to get back to something that gives humanity more of a future than the globalist trends.
Do we really get more of a future out of handmade items? I mean, in the final analysis, we're not going to have any handmade we're not likely to have any handmade, not many handmade automobiles, for example. Not many handmade rifles. I mean, there are certain just realities behind the economics of scale, where major corporations make all the stuff and they do it at a relatively low price. And
I think perhaps what we've been seeing is perhaps because we talk about our standard of living, and I think that has significantly decreased over the years. And I think these people don't have jobs, and I think they're resorting to something. They can't get a job that doesn't pay anything, so they're resorting to something that they can do, something, you know, hopefully they do well, because only those that do something well will make it, only because of the competition. And even if they get online in order to compete, you still got millions of, you know, people, or, you know, you have, thousands of other people who do the same thing. And I don't think they're doing it to fight globalism. I think they're doing it out of need.
No, I agree. I agree. That's not their intent, but it might be their effect a little bit. But still, the point is, I could whittle, who knows, heads, all right, sculptures. I could whittle some here in Texas, and in my community, I might be able to sell some if I were talented. And Melody could do the same thing in her community, and you could do the same in your community, Joe. And we wouldn't be in direct competition because most of what we're selling is local. There's room for this, but what can we actually make? You know, it goes to, if you want a job, though, if you want a job that you can count on having in the future that isn't going to be taken over by robots, it'll be something that's local, all right, that's not subject to globalization per se, and that would be something like being a plumber, being an electrician, being a carpenter, being a handyman, having tools in a truck with a utility body on it where you can go out and do things locally, all right? Because they can't send a robot in to fix your plumbing. That's not something the robots can do, and they're not going to do in the foreseeable future. They're going to have to call someone who lives local. You can't call somebody from Peking. Get on the internet. Let's look. Boy, we could get a really cheap plumber out of Peking. Well, how do we pay for him to bring him down here to Texas? No. So there's something about if you want to keep a job and stay employed, you want something that is local, right? You want to get tied into something that's local in the sense that the guy that's doing it has to live in that local community. You can't have someone from out of town doing your plumbing, your electrical repair, or whatever. And the same thing with this craftsmanship.
The part about craftsmanship is it takes so much time. If you're good at something, it takes a lot of time to create, and you end up spending a lot of time, and it's very difficult in order to provide, you know, something that's of quality, you know, in a short period of time.
It doesn't take that long, Melody. All you got to look is, all you have to do is find some other craftsmen who are starving in South Dakota, for example. And you can buy all their sculptures for a dime on the dollar and then sell them as if they were yours locally.
Well, no, I mean, it's very difficult. It sounds like easy, like you can just slap things together and so forth. But if you do a quality and you have a talent for it, it's difficult. It's very time consuming. But, I think you can add to your income, but I would think it would be very hard to sustain.
Well,
there's
going to be difficult times for everybody. That's what's coming down. And tradesmen is going to be, it's going to be the kind of job that there will be a point in time where women, for example, I don't know if I want to marry this guy. He's a tradesman. No, he's a tradesman. My God, he's got his little plumbing business. He's got a little electrical business. He drives around a truck with a utility body. He's going to be a prize in another few years. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. Melody and I are back again on Financial Survival. We've got a caller, Yvonne, is calling us. Hello, Yvonne, what up?
Yeah, good afternoon, Alan, Melody.
Hi, Ivan.
Hi, Dan. I wanted to talk about the Amish people here in Pennsylvania. They do a lot of handcrafted stuff, and it's well, you know, it's excellent quality, but the price is pretty high. You know, I mean, I went to a couple of the shows they had, you know, not far from Allentown. So, I mean, if somebody, you know, when the money was not a problem, I think they did very well because that probably lasted for, you know, many more years than you buy something, you know, on a furniture floor. You know, in some Flanagan or whatever these big stores are. And so, yes, quality is there. And like you were talking, it takes a little bit of time to do it, well. And like these Amish people do very well, you know, they're expert in it. But the price is also there. And I don't know how well they are selling that stuff because, you know, people today are looking at every penny and, you know, turning it over five times in their hand before they give it out, you know. So that is the only thing which would be a drawback as far as, you know, buying.
Well, I think I'm only guessing. I don't know how the Amish structure the sale of their furniture products, for example, but I'm guessing it's mostly to visitors to come see oh my gosh, look how these people are living. They come to see the Amish way of life, and while they're there, they see some of these chairs or tables or whatever. It's like, can we buy this? Can we take this home? This would be perfect in our kitchen. I think I'm guessing that they're selling on impulse to people who have the impulse to buy, who are attracted to visit the Amish as a tourist destination in the first place. Do you know if that's true or false?
Well, yeah, they are busy, but they do have, I don't want to say showrooms or whatever, but they do have locales, areas where they have the furniture laid out for your purchase, and they would deliver it. Now, they are not going to, yeah, I went to a couple of them, like I say, this is a few years back, and I mean, the quality is there. There's no question about it. It's well built. is outlast anything you buy, you know, in any showroom. And they can also probably incorporate your liking of the way, you know, the presentation, you know, maybe put some wax, whatever, you know, some kind of wax on it or whatever you want, you know. I mean, they can make it more for the particular buyer. But in the, generally, the thing is that that was quite, you know, you could see quite a few ads in a paper. Now, in the last year, I didn't see one ad about Amish furniture or whatever, you know. So I'm sure that they are cutting back because there's just not enough people who are interested in purchasing quality stuff and paying for it, you know, probably not, you know, exuberant money, much of money, but, you know, they certainly are a little bit higher than you go to the local furniture store and pick up whatever, you know, whatever you want. So I agree that, you know, manually produced stuff is certainly better quality. In fact, way back I was looking to get homemade stuff from Europe where I was grown up, or, you know, when I left, and, you know, open up a store here and, you know, sell, you know, wooden carvings of figurines and stuff like that, you know. Which was quite also quite prominent were there, and I had a couple of Palestinians here who were selling olive wood carvings from Holy Land, from Palestine. And that was very big on Christmas, okay? I mean, almost big, every big mall had one or two stands, like, you know, a kiosk, you know, with different home of fine, you know, handmade Bethlehem.
Yeah, but are they still in business? Are they still in business?
No, it's gone now. It's just not, you know, first of all, you probably saturate the stuff too, you know. I mean,
you know, it's like anything else. It's like hula hoops.
Yeah.
You know, there are different products that come on. I don't know. There may be a lot of people who don't even remember hula hoops by now. They were a big fad back in the 50s, and they've lasted to some extent over the years, but not the way they were in the 50s. Big fad. Well, it's like a lot of things, hand carvings and whatever. There's a point in time when the public has as many of those as they want, and now they start looking for what's the next new thing. And it tells us something. It tells us that if you want to stay employed, you need to provide something that people need all the time, whether they like it or not.
Well, right? The other thing,
and that means, again, plumbing and electrical and fundamental services, mechanical, fix a car. If you can provide services people have to have simply because things that they need break down. Periodically, your plumbing fails. Periodically, your electrical system fails. Your air conditioning goes out. If you can deal with those problems and you've got your own tools, and that's the most important part, you have to have, you want to be in business for yourself, you got to have your own tools. If you don't have the tools, you are an employee at best. If you got a job, you're an employee. If you got the tools, even if you're called to go to work at midnight, you can go out and make a premium price. Somebody calls up, hey, the water broke. Can you do anything about it? Yeah, I could be there right now, but it's going to cost you X number of dollars.
Yeah.
Got to have the tools.
The other thing is, like we're talking about, you know, mechanics for the cars, but the cars are so complicated or being made complicated by computerized parts that that you have to have some major tools or electronic equipment in order to diagnose the whole thing so that you know what the problem is. So you have to invest a lot of money into that for you to be in competition with a large repair service who sells cars and also, you know, and repairs them. So it's getting more out of the hand of the individual than...
I agree. You know, it's escaping us. We are being replaced by robots.
Well,
you know, that's the unfortunate reality at the moment. We are being replaced by robots. Truth of the matter is, the robot works 24/7. He doesn't just work an 8-hour shift. He works, you know, 24 hours a day, doesn't complain, doesn't have any health care costs. He's building that car, or it's building that car that's coming out of the off the assembly line in Detroit or wherever it is they manufacture automobiles now.
If you have mechanics, let's say you have a shop, you have to send those people to training because each year is a new incorporation of the higher technical equipment going into the car. You have to understand it, how it works, what the problems are, and so on, and diagnose it and then repair it. So I agree. This is where the whole thing is starting to get out of hand totally. And, you know, that's why the...
And you're exactly right with the expression getting out of hand in the sense that the technology is moving beyond our ability to understand it. All right? I can remember I had a utility body truck myself one point, and one of the great things about it is there was space under the hood. It had a straight six engine in it. It was an old Ford 250. Right?
Yeah.
I could climb into the engine area under the hood and stand on the ground while I was working on the engine.
Yeah.
Today you get a modern engine and that thing is engineered to you where you can barely get your hand in there to change spark plugs, assuming it has any spark plugs.
Well, it's the whole thing.
It's a project. They're beautiful engines. What they're building today are closer to rocket ships than they are the vehicles I'm familiar with from back when I was a kid. Whatever. They're like buckboards compared to what we have today. We have spectacular automotive products, but you try to fix them, and you got an entirely different problem on your hands. You better hold up a bank or something because you're not going to get out of there cheap.
All you have to do is go get a zero rate loan and a 7-year loan, and you can just trade that sucker in when it breaks and keep the economy going.
I wonder if we're going to see a day, and I wouldn't bet on it, but it just crosses my mind. Are we going to see a day where people start taking mechanics, people that are mechanically inclined, are able to buy automobiles that have a quarter of a million miles on them and are therefore pretty much run down. They're not good buys anymore. Can you buy those cheap? And could you be a good enough mechanic where you could repair them and bring them up to snuff where they'd be good for another 100,000 to 150,000 miles and sell them at a profit? Do you think that's possible, Yvonne?
Yeah, I think the material which they are made out of, like titanium they use, and, you know, some pretty sophisticated hard metals, you know, which can sustain heat and so on, so that it can probably be life extended on it, you know, by another 50% maybe, up to 50, let's say, from 30 to 50%, let's say, by, you know, maybe changing certain internal parts and any some whatever computer parts which are needed, but overall, I think the life extension of somebody's cars can be done. I would say
it can be done, but do you think there's going to be a market for it? Would people rather, depending on price, would they rather buy a vehicle that was made 10 years ago? It's got 250,000 miles on it, but it's been renewed. It's been refurbished. Would they rather buy that, or would there be a market for it? Would they trust it, or would they insist on buying new cars?
Well, if it's refurbished, if it's refurbished by let's say manufacturer type of person, just like a camera, or something else, you can buy it refurbished at much cheaper price, and it's refurbished and gives you. Same picture quality and so on, and it would be the similar with a car.
What if you set up your own assembly line, and every time you were going to refurbish, instead of refurbishing cars one at a time, what if you made it your business to buy half a dozen of the same model?
Yeah,
same year, same model. You got them cheap, and you put them and you rebuilt all of them at the same time, where your help was essentially doing the same, whatever you had to teach them to do. They did that on the first card, then they did it on the second card, then they did it on the third, fourth, and fifth, and all of a sudden you've got six refurbished automobiles and put them out in the front lot, and maybe you could sell them. Do you think that's viable?
Yes, yeah, you have to give them the warranty, you know, as you would probably with a maybe not as a brand new car, but you need
to. The problem is it wouldn't be cost effective to the point where people could just go out and buy a new car. And that's the problem with even any used car, is the prices, and with the zero rate financing and with the 7-year loans, you know, people go out and buy new cars. They don't have to barely put any money down. They have a warranty on it. So if anything happens to it in, you know, the 1 year or 5 years for the powertrain and so forth, you know, so it's just not cost effective. Plus you have to deal with emissions. The emissions are constantly changing. The regulations for that, so you know,
but I don't think they're retroactive.
I just don't think it would be. Oh, yes, they are. Are you kidding me?
Well, they have to be inspected.
There's some states, when I lived in Arizona, they made you turn in. That's why you have these. I remember you would turn in the old cars for, you know, to
a junker.
If they don't pass emissions, you can't drive them.
Yeah,
I agree. But one other point, zero interest rate is going to be here forever. There's going to be a point when, if you have to borrow, you're going to have to pay a fairly high interest rate. It can't stay down near zero forever. And that is going to detract. It's going to deter people from buying new automobiles. And they're going to be, I don't know, I might be able to get another 100,000 miles out of this, you know, 5-10 years.
Yeah, they'll keep them, but they're not going to have somebody who refurbishes them to.
Well, maybe they will, Melody. You don't know. That may be a new job for you or me or Yvonne. We may get to a point where we have to do it. Huh? The economy collapses. What are you doing? I'm taking jobs from the illegal aliens. The illegal aliens are going to complain that the Americans are taking jobs from us. They're working cheaper than we do.
Well, the thing is that you have to have the knowledge too, you know. I mean, it has to be knowledge what you are, you know, if you are refurbishing a car, you have to understand what you're doing. Otherwise,
That's always been true, but we are coming to a point. And
but
again,
what I'm saying is
the robots, where our knowledge is not adequate. The robot with the computer behind it has levels of knowledge that we can't match. I can't remember all the details on that engine. The robot can't. All right, but here we go, Yvonne. We are out of time. We've got to thank you for your call, and we will talk about robots and what to do about it on another date. In the meantime, thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Joe from Arkansas, Yvonne, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got to be a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all.
Money.